and welcome back to the Urology Care Podcast, the official podcast of the Urology Care Foundation. Our guest today is Matt Odey, a testicular cancer survivor, and he is here to share his story in support of Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. Matt has overcome tremendous obstacles along his journey, and we are very excited to have the opportunity to speak with him. Matt, welcome, and thank you for coming on today's episode of the Urology Care Podcast.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here and, you know, hopefully help your audience as well.
So Matt, can you start by giving just an overview of your story so that listeners can really understand where this all started for you and the struggles that you faced along the way?
So I'm 29 years old now. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. And at the age of 24, I was diagnosed with stage 3C testicular cancer. At the time, I was a personal trainer, really healthy. And one night, I ended up puking up blood, got rushed to the emergency room. They found out that I had lost 2/3 of my blood circulating in my body, which is equivalent to pretty much being shot with a gun. And right then, they gave me 6 bags of blood, put me into an emergency surgery. And the next day I woke up basically to my doctor coming in the room, sitting down with me and telling me that he found an 11-centimeter tumor in my small intestine. And they know it's cancerous. They just don't know what type yet. And they had to rush me to the main campus of the Cleveland Clinic, which thank goodness is right on my, you know, front doorstep. And it's one of the best hospitals in the US. So I was very fortunate there. So I get there, they do a ton of tests on me. And that's where they found out that I had stage 3C testicular cancer. Now, a lot of people would say stage 4. It's the same thing. My oncologist told me that there's just not a stage 4, but to each their own. So I pretty much had the highest stage of testicular cancer. And it had spread to all over my body pretty much, except for my brain, which thank goodness. So I immediately was on 5 rounds of chemotherapy, which lasted roughly about 3 months. I was on what's called BEP, which is bleomycin, etoposide, and cisplatin. It's very potent drugs. Usually they only do 4 rounds of them, but in this case, they decided to do 5. And the really rare case about my testicular cancer was it actually never formed in my testicle. And for most males, like 90 to 95%, you find a symptom in your testicle. For me, it was totally abnormal, which was kind of like a case study that they wanted to do with me. And also they usually do a surgery first to remove the testicle before they do chemo. But mine was so advanced that they needed to just get the chemo through right away. My tumor was just too large at the time. So I went through all of that. Finally, I finished chemotherapy, a lot of ups and downs, you know, losing your hair, very fatigued, nauseous all the time. I mean, everything that anybody has either experienced in chemo or knows somebody, I've pretty much gone through it. But, you know, you think that's the hard part, but really the real challenges came after my chemotherapy. You know, I ended up sitting down with my oncologist and he basically sat down and said, Matt, we have really good news and we have some bad news. And the good news is your tumor has shrunk from 11 centimeters to 3 centimeters. So I was like, awesome, that's great. But the bad news is it's wrapped around what's called your inferior vena cava. Now, your inferior vena cava, for those of you who don't know, is basically, from my understanding, a central vein that goes from the bottom of your upper body to your heart. And they had to completely remove the vena cava. They ended up having to do an 11.5-hour surgery to remove the vena cava, remove the tumor, and remove all the lymph nodes in my body as well. I had what's called an RPLND. I'm not exactly sure it's like pronounced fully, but it's basically where they remove the rest of the cancer in your body. And it was a very intense surgery where they opened me up from my left hip to my right hip. And where the real complications came into play is I pretty much went into that surgery at about 140, 145 pounds. And as I was telling you before, I was about 185 pounds. So I lost about 40 pounds through chemo. Coming out of it, I was close to 200 pounds of swelling. My body went into pretty much what's called compartment syndrome. It decided to shut down about 1.5 weeks after my surgery. I got rushed back. So I was out of the hospital for about a week, get rushed back into the emergency room. They have to drain 7 liters of fluid out of my stomach, which can cause me to go into complete kidney and liver failure. I had a cone drilled inside my head to relieve potential brain swelling, catheter in my chest and in my neck because I thought I was going to be in dialysis the rest of my life. And I fell into a 2-week non-induced coma. Long story short, I'm going to get more into this part, but I ended up in the ICU for 40 days. I was in the clinic for 53 straight days. A week out of my coma, I went into cardiac arrest when they went to go take out one of the catheters in my neck. They did 8 minutes of CPR, went back into another 1-week coma, had to completely relearn to walk and pretty much relived my entire life again. I ended up having 4 additional surgeries throughout that 53-day stay. My last surgery that they did was called an open wound surgery. So they had to completely open me up. They couldn't close my stomach back together. So I had a football-sized mesh over my stomach. That took a full year for the skin to eventually heal. And in a matter of 53 days, I dropped down to 110 pounds. And for a good 2 years, I had to really, really focus on myself, my mental, emotional, physical health. And I think that's the biggest part. You know, when you're done with cancer, when you're, you know, technically, whether you're cancer-free or NED, doesn't mean that you're done with cancer. If anything, it's just as challenging as a journey as it was during cancer, because the fact that a lot of people, whether it's scanxiety, worrying whether the cancer is going to reoccur or come back, or the fact that you are just not the same person that you were before cancer, and all your loved ones expect you to just kind of go back to who you were. And I knew for me, I had a bigger purpose, a bigger vision, but it was really hard because I knew I had to take care of myself first. So for a good 2 years, it was all taking care of myself. And then all of a sudden, I kind of basically said, hey, listen, like, obviously I'm here for a reason and I'm faith-based. So, you know, don't push faith on anybody. But for me as a Christian, I just know that God put me here for a bigger reason. And I just started to get in front of the right people and really figure out what is it that I need to do with my life? Where do I need to go? And I would say the number one thing that helped me was, instead of getting just in front of like cancer organizations, at first I started getting in front of entrepreneurs. And the reason was because I knew I had a big problem that I wanted to help people with. And that's exactly what they do. They take a big problem, they solve it, and they help others. So started doing that. They told me, listen, as I started sharing my story, you need to get out there more, share your story. And I became a keynote motivational speaker. And, you know, of course, COVID hit. So it kind of took a wrench into things. And from there, I started doing more group and community work, where I built my own Facebook group back in October. We have over 20, we're almost at 2,400 members now in a matter of like 5 months of just cancer patients, survivors. And it's just been an incredible journey. And I have a lot of things that I want to do to really make an impact, not just in the cancer community, but more for survivorship and mental health, emotional health, helping people through depression, anxiety, the PTSD of traumatic experiences in their lives. You know, because that was such a big deal for me, and it took a toll on me for a good 2 years. So that's kind of my 5 to 10 minute version of everything. So.
Thank you so much for being so open to share that. You talked a lot about, you know, your physical state, everything you had to overcome in that regard. And then you kind of went a little bit into the mental aspect. Can you touch a little bit more on that mental aspect, those mental struggles you faced from the time that you first found out that you were diagnosed all the way through the recovery, and kind of what you do now to kind of keep that strong mental state as you continue on?
100%. I think that's like pretty much one of the biggest factors when it comes to going through traumatic experiences, is how do you deal with it mentally? And when I first was diagnosed, like the first day, I remember it was just me and my parents. I looked over at them and I was like, okay, I want to be the strong person. I think I was in so much shock too, that I was just holding all of the emotions in. I'm like, I'm going to be strong for my parents. I was only dating my girlfriend, Lauren, for 2 months before I was diagnosed. So to put that burden on her, I was like, okay, maybe she's going to break up with me. I don't know. But I'm like, I'm going to be strong for Lauren. I'm going to be strong for all my friends who find out. And, you know, as the days go by, people start visiting and visiting. And I still kind of had this like front on of like being strong, X, Y, and Z. And then Lauren comes, and, you know, I was so nervous because I was like, okay, well, here's the moment. And she basically said, I'm not leaving you. I'm staying here every second of the way. And all my emotions spewed out. And I think that was the very first step for me allowing to really release what I was going through to help me through the emotional and mental side of it. I think a lot of us, especially men out there, have this connotation that they, if they open up, it shows weakness, it shows vulnerability, it shows something that is just like, they had this persona their whole life of you can't do that. And I think it's the exact opposite. When you're ready to, and it doesn't have to be to everybody, it can be to one person, but when you're ready to open up through what you're going through and really spew out your emotions, it's like all that baggage releases from you. And that's what it allowed me to do. And it allowed to look at, this is what it helped me with here. It allowed me to look at life as everything in life is happening for me, not to me. This is what I mean by that. Not everything in life is like going to be a good thing. But if you start looking at your challenges, why is this happening to me? You start making excuses. You start blaming other people. You start blaming God or whatever you want to believe in. And if you can take the exact same setback, the exact same challenge, and look at it, it's how is this happening for me? You can use it as a lesson. You can use it as a way to grow. And even more importantly, you can use it to help the next person who's going through a similar challenge. And I'll tell you right now, I had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of, okay, I'm going to grow through this. I'm going to learn through it. And then a really big setback would happen. And I'm like, screw this. I'm like out and I get so upset. And this is where pretty much when you're going through your battles, you cannot fight them alone. Like you just can't. And I'm not saying you have to have a huge group of people, even if it's just one person. You know, for me, I was very lucky to have a lot of people in my life. But when I really needed to rely on somebody, I had two different people or three different people that I rely on. Number one was Lauren, because I just felt like I can open up to her no matter what. Or number two is somebody that maybe you can relate to. Somebody who maybe has gone through cancer and has overcame it. And you feel comfortable because you feel like that your emotional connection is with them. So when you're feeling like crap one day, they know exactly how you felt X, Y, and Z months or years ago. And that really helped me. I had what's called a Fourth Angels mentor, and I had a testicular survivor who helped me through that emotional side of it. So I would say those are the biggest keys to helping me through this roller coaster emotion of anxiety, PTSD, constant reoccurrence, even some depression throughout my journey with cancer.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I think, you know, our hope with this podcast and sharing these patient stories is to bring hope to other people who might be going through it or knowing someone who might have gone through it or is currently going through it. So I think the information that you shared is really valuable. So kind of going off of what you were saying in regards to your support system, can you go a little bit into what the response was from your family when this first started happening? And how did they support you during this time? And then a little bit into how other families and caregivers can best support someone with this type of cancer based on your experiences.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so we'll start with my dad. My dad was like the information guru. I hated, I couldn't be that person. Like as a patient, the more information that kept spewing just gave me so much anxiety. So for me, I was lucky enough to have my dad who was like, hey, listen, I'll retain all this information. And then it came down to communication of like, he and I knew when he needed to tell me something of like, hey, take this medication or eat these kind of foods, or this is what's going to be happening kind of thing, and not giving me the anxiety of it, just giving me what I need to know. So as a caregiver, I think the most important thing that I've experienced at least is communicating what your patient first needs, obviously, but also like communicate so that you're not giving them anxiety or stress throughout this, more stress throughout this journey. Because each person in my support system, Lauren was like my moral support of like, hey, I'm going to push you one step further each day. My mom was the faith-based. I'm going to pray for you every single day. My dad was the information person. I'm not saying you're going to have all these people in your life, but find those people that will help you through certain areas that maybe give you so much stress and say, hey, listen, could you help me with this? And I can almost guarantee if they're a family member or somebody that really cares and loves about you, they're going to do whatever you ask them to help you with. Because a lot of the times as a caregiver, the only thing they know what to do is say, hey, what can I help you with? That's all they can ask you. It's like, hey, if there's anything I can do, please let me know. So as a patient, I think if we can get more specific with, hey, can you help me with this? Instead of just saying, thank you, I appreciate it, and just expecting them to help you with things, be more specific with what you want and what you think will help you throughout your journey. And it'll make a world of difference. And for me, it did. I had friends and family too, who would just give me small gifts or small things that they knew would just kind of help me throughout my journey as well. So that was a massive part in figuring out what areas of my life did I want to know at the time, or did I just want my dad to know? And so that like when the time came, I'm ready to go. And I wasn't stressing for weeks about this situation, like a, you know, something that could potentially happen or X, Y, and Z. And if I needed to know it, they would obviously tell me, but it was just very helpful in that case.
Can you speak a little bit in terms of what you would advise patients to do who may feel like they can't speak for themselves or who are nervous to speak up for what they want or what they need because it is such an overwhelming situation that they're in?
Yeah, absolutely. This is honestly the two biggest things to start opening up with. Find somebody you know, like, and trust. And I'm not saying you have to, like I said, you don't have to tell a ton of people. It starts with one person. And just start by opening up with one thing that's been on your mind. And as you do that, it's called momentum. You'll start to get momentum. You'll start to get more into being comfortable with sharing what you need to go with. So it's either that person you know, like, and trust, or the person you can relate to. I'm telling you, those are the two biggest things right now. We're finding a community like mine having a group like this is just like, there's thousands of people in it. And the cool part about it is most people don't post for about a month before they actually share their story because they're so nervous about it. But what lets them actually be able to share their story is the fact that they see so many other stories that are relatable. And so they don't feel alone. So they don't feel like I'm the only one going through this struggle mentally, emotionally, or physically along this journey. So getting in front of either community, finding somebody you know, like, or trust, or just finding that one like mentor that's gone through that situation that can really be there for you. That is the first way to start opening up. And as you continue to do that, I'm telling you right now, like every time you share something, it really is like a weight lifted off of your shoulder.
So kind of looking back on the journey that you went through, what advice do you have for patients who either just found out about a diagnosis, are in the middle of treatment, or who are in recovery? And is there anything that you wish, looking back, that you would have known during those times?
Yeah, being more present in the moment, meaning focusing on winning the day. I don't need to win the week. I don't need to win the month, because I know if I win the day, eventually I'll win the week and eventually I'll win the month. And what I mean by that is stop worrying about what's going to happen a month out, because a lot of the times you have no idea what's going to happen. It creates false stories. Basically, what anxiety is you take a scenario, you create a story behind it, and you make it the worst possible case scenario of all time. And you let it control your body, basically. And I told myself, the more present I am and the more I focus on today, what can I do today to better myself? I'll worry about tomorrow when tomorrow comes. You know, yeah, there's things you can prepare for and things like that. But stop constantly worrying about tomorrow and stop constantly dwelling on the past. Because all the past is going to do is create depression or going to create unnecessary stress of like, well, this happened in the past. So what if it happens now, or X, Y, and Z? Today is today, and you need to focus on what can I do? So for me, it was one little thing, and how it is like, you know, the classic saying, Rome wasn't built in a day. And what it basically means is, what are you doing today that will compile or compound each day to creating more success, to creating where you need to go in your journey with cancer or any other struggle that you're facing? So for me, it might've been walking 50 meters that day, may have been eating something healthier, may have been opening up to a certain scenario or a situation I was struggling with. Whatever it was along that journey, I was just trying to be present. And yeah, of course, we're always going to be worried. Like, you know, when scans are coming up or when we have a surgery or we have to go back to chemo or X, Y, and Z, it's going to be nerve wracking. But I promise you, if you can just try to focus on winning the day, it'll make your life so much easier.
And would that same mindset go into place during recovery as well? Because I would imagine patients who have gone through this type of cancer, and really any type of cancer, worrying about whether if it's going to come back or how long until something may come up again. Would that same mindset be something that patients could benefit from during that part as well?
100%. No doubt. Scanxiety is probably one of the most stressful things, and it's always going to be there no matter what. I don't care if you're a 50-year survivor, it's going to be there a little bit, but time helps, no doubt. I'm on 4 years now. And for the first, like for me, it was like 3 month checkup, 3 month checkup, 3 month checkup for the first year and a half to 2 years. And yeah, it's nerve wracking because every 3 months you have to go get checked up. And then it went to 6 months and it went to a yearly for me. And really, you know, I used to be stressed for 2-3 weeks before. And now it's like 2-3 days, maybe. I get my blood work 3 days before I go into get my scan so that I know what the results are before I even see my doctor. And it really helps me that way. That's been a big thing for me, is I schedule my blood work 3 to 5 days before, get the results before I see my doctor. And then when I walk in to see my doctor, if I have any questions on anything, I know what to do. So that's helped me a lot. And I think it's a big push for people who are struggling with that side of cancer. But I will tell you this, it's okay to have those feelings. That makes us human. You know, we're always going to have some type of anxious thoughts or things like that. Like for me, I don't like flying. I'll put it this way. It has nothing to do with cancer. I'm just going to throw this out there. I don't like flying, but guess what? I'm going on a plane on Saturday. And yeah, I've been thinking about it for 3 to 4 days, but you know what? I have to practice what I preach every single day, and I'm going to be fine. I know everything's going to be all right. And at the end of the day, you look back and you're like, okay, I can take a deep breath and I'll keep pushing forward. So that's what I would tell anybody who, you know, has those anxious thoughts all the time on whatever it is along your journey.
So as we go into testicular cancer month, which is the month of April, what are some things that you think either patients or caregivers should know about this type of cancer and the journey that people they know may go through?
Yeah, please, if you are a male, anywhere in your teens to whatever age, like, please just, if you notice any symptoms, number one, go get it checked sooner than later. I let mine go. I didn't say this in the beginning, but I had back pain for, I mean, I obviously didn't have any form in the testicle, so it was hard to recognize it, but I had something that I knew was not right in my body, period. And I had it for about 3 months where I had extreme, extreme back pain. And if I would have just went and gotten checked, I probably would have had stage 1 testicular cancer instead of this crazy cancer. But, you know, I think everything happens for a reason for me. But please, that's my number one thing, is coming into this cancer, testicular cancer awareness, for any male out there. I mean, anybody in general, but any male out there, if you find any symptom, go get it checked out. Don't be embarrassed. Don't be afraid, because the longer you wait, the worse it can get. So that's my number one thing. And number two is just, like, for us men, being willing to open up. I think it's just such an important thing, you know, and I'm not saying you have to open up like what I'm doing, but I really truly believe the more vulnerable you are in your life, the more people can actually relate to what you're going through. People don't always relate to flashy, fancy things all the time. They look at those people and they're like, oh my gosh, cool, but they can't relate to that. So when you're able to share with what you're going through, share your struggle, share your vulnerability, not for people to just be like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I'm so sorry for you, X, Y, and Z, but to help people to share it so that you can say, hey, listen, I know you're struggling through this too, potentially. And, you know, sharing what you're going through, that'll help the next person too. And every time that I've shared my story, I've had men reach out to me and say, hey, Matt, you've given me the courage to go to the doctor. You've given me the courage to open up about my situation. And it's helped me so much throughout this. So that's another thing you can do. And then number three would be just getting involved in the communities. Get involved in some way. Like, if you've gone through something traumatic in your life, get involved in a similar community like that. And not only will it make somebody else's day better, but by purely just giving back in life makes your life so much more meaningful. It feels like you have a purpose. It feels like you have something to actually go out and do with your life. If you just sit around all day and do nothing and wait for things to happen, you're going to feel like you're meaningless. So get involved in communities. You don't, however way you want. You can do it once a month. I don't care what it is, but get involved and just be present and help those people in need. So those would be my biggest things.
Great. Thank you. And is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience or bring light to, again, as we're going into Testicular Cancer Awareness Month?
Yeah, I would say the mental and emotional side. Like, literally the reason I created a community on Facebook was purely because I know that cancer is just as much of a battle as the emotional side as it is physical. You know, you're going to go through the physical battles, chemotherapy, surgeries, recovery, all of these things. But that emotional, mental side is everything in your recovery. Like, when you have a positive outlook, and I'm not saying it's going to be every day. I had so many ups and downs. And that's why I relied on my support, relied on my faith, relied on me being present in the moment. Being, say, how do I win the day instead of constantly worrying what's going to happen in the future? So if you can take those strategies and really use them into your day, and the days you're feeling really down on yourself or things are not going your way, and you can have that support system or whatever to help push you through, that is what helps you grow in life. That is what allows you to become that better version of yourself. It's not always winning. It's actually when the hard days are there and you're able to persevere through them. That's where the most lessons and the growth comes into play.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on today's episode of the Urology Care Podcast and being so open about your journey with testicular cancer.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope that it's definitely helped your community out and, you know, hope you have an amazing rest of your day.
Matt's story will also be included in our summer digital issue of Urology Health Extra, which will be available the end of May. So make sure to subscribe online at urologyhealth.org. This podcast has been brought to you by the Urology Care Foundation, the official foundation of the American Urological Association. For more information on today's topic and for all things urology health, visit urologyhealth.org. That's urologyhealth.org.